This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Coming up on the second half of our show, we're talking to presenters at FSW's Critical Thinking Lecture Series this October about putting your brain to work and checking your own biases at the door, steps they say can lead to a sharper mind, fresh ideas, and a better life. But first, a new law went into effect Sunday that requires the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to establish autism awareness training protocols for law enforcement officers across the state. The measure passed during this year's state legislative session. Impetus for the new law came in part from a shooting incident last summer that garnered national media attention when a North Miami police officer shot Charles Kinsey, who was trying to protect his autistic patient. Kinsey was lying on the ground with his hands raised when he was shot, and the officer later said that he'd actually been aiming for Kinsey's autistic patient, who was holding a toy truck that officers mistook for a gun. Concern over how someone with an autism spectrum disorder can be misunderstood by police can be a big fear for parents and caretakers. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, about 1 in 68 children have now been identified as having an autism spectrum disorder, and such individuals are likely to have much more contact with law enforcement over the course of their lives. Joining me now for a closer look at the law and what autism awareness training for law enforcement officers actually entails is Democratic State Representative Evan Jenny of Dania Beach. He sponsored the measure and championed its passage through the Florida House last session. Representative Jenny, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
I'm glad that you're here. And also, we're joined by Lee County Sheriff's Office Lieutenant Scott Leinberger. He provides autism awareness and other training protocols for the LCSO. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And also from Tallahassee, we're speaking with Kathy Zinko with Florida State University's Center for Autism and Related Disabilities. She's a Florida licensed speech pathologist with nearly two decades of experience working with individuals on the autism spectrum. She also conducted numerous training workshops and consultations related to autism spectrum disorders and best practices, and she co-authored the 2012 revision of the book Understanding the Nature of Autism, a guidebook to the autism spectrum disorders. Kathy, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
I'm so delighted to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
I'd also like to invite listeners to join the conversation as well by calling in 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU, using the hashtag GCL. First, Representative Jenny, let's start with you. First of all, tell me what this new law that went into effect this week actually does.
Well, what it'll do is it'll make sure our law enforcement officers, when they have their training seminars and classes, that they will be presented in some way, shape, or form, training on recognizing and just keeping an eye out, for layman's terms, when they engage with someone from the public, that they are aware that autism has very high rates, and it's some way to make sure that that they at least have a background in identifying individuals that fall within the autism spectrum.
So what put this issue on your radar? Was it the Miami Beach shooting incident that I mentioned a moment ago that motivated you to sponsor this bill?
Actually, it wasn't. We had filed this bill a year before. I did not get a hearing in 2016 during session. The Kinsey case was a really sad occurrence, and anyone who's familiar with the story, it's just a horrible tale. Through no fault of anyone, I don't want to cast any aspersions on anyone that was involved that day, because it was so confusing. But we had filed the bill actually that session months before the Kinsey case actually happened. I think after the Kinsey case, my colleagues in the legislature saw a much more pressing need for it. There was a piece of legislation that had already been drafted in my bill, and they were good enough to hear the bill at all the stops and vote it out the House floor. And Senate did the same, and the governor was good enough to sign it.
Does this law include any specific allocation of state tax dollars maybe to implement the training?
No, actually, that was one of the benefits that some of my other colleagues had actually mentioned, because FDLE was willing to absorb the cost of some of that, or all of that, excuse me, and so they already had some pre-existing work that had been done that could be incorporated into that. So our staff analysis, reality can always be different, but our staff analysis on the bill that was done by the House showed that that there would be virtually no cost.
Were there a lot of law enforcement agencies that already had this kind of training in place?
Some did, but I wouldn't go so far as to say a lot. But there were definitely some.
It sounds like you just went out of range and you just kind of dropped off, but we do have someone here in the room with us. The Lee County Sheriff's Office already did have an autism awareness training in place. Is that correct?
Yes, we've been hosting autism training for our deputies since 2011.
And why do you think it's important for deputies to understand what autism is and what kind of reactions they're going to get from people that they encounter?
Well, we deal with a variety of people on a daily basis, and we need to give deputies as much information as they can possibly take in regarding to different personalities, what they're going to encounter, different disorders that are out there, and the appropriate responses to those. We have to make sure that they can identify that it is an autism spectrum disorder, not a behavioral issue or any other issue. And once they identify that there's an issue there that is related to autism, then they can develop their response appropriately.
How can you tell the difference?
Well, there's lots of different ways. First off, interaction. Tell them to look for clues such as echolalia, people responding back. We'll ask them a question and they'll respond with that same question. That gives us an indicator. It's not necessarily indicative of them being rude or disrespectful to us. That just may be a symptom or a characteristic of that autism spectrum disorder. And once they realize, okay, this is an autism spectrum disorder issue, not a disorderly or disrespectful issue, they can say, what is my appropriate response? And that appropriate response is, do we find a caretaker? Is this person able to care for themselves? What is our course of action from there?
And you've been doing this type of training since when, did you say?
Well, we've always touched on the subject for years. I mean, this is going back before when I was involved in it. However, in 2011, we really started identifying autism as a separate issue and directing training related to it, especially dealing with the kids that are on the autism spectrum disorder.
Yeah, it's just hard to tell, you know, from person to person. And then the spectrum is so wide. It can be a small issue and you don't know when something's going to come up too. It's hard to know where to step, I would think, as a police officer when you're interacting with someone.
Absolutely. It can change at a moment's notice and we have to be prepared for that and we have to be prepared to respond appropriately to that.
And it's kind of a buzzword, but you don't want anything to escalate. And
correct.
In a situation with an autistic individual, I would think things – do they escalate faster?
It depends. Again, it goes back to everyone is different. We can't train every single response to every single incident because it's autism spectrum. It's not a single disorder that you can look at and identify that person has this or not. It's not something you can see. It's something that you have to interact with the person to discover. And then you have to form form your response based on what their indications are that they're giving you.
Yeah. And Representative Jenny, the response to the legislative action has been positive and support for the most part. But Tallahassee Police Chief Michael DeLeo is not a fan. Back in spring, he called it feel-good legislation, indicating that he thinks requiring this kind of training for officers is sort of a Band-Aid, but it's not really going to fix the problem. What was your response to that kind of rare criticism?
My apologies. Am I back in order again? Can you hear me again?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, perfect. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion. I happen to think that given the fact that there were a number of other law enforcement agencies that were already engaged in this prior to, might disagree. I don't want to speak for anyone at all, but just given their existence seems to be a refutation of that claim. But everyone's entitled to their opinion.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of the process.
Yeah. It did have overwhelming support, though, when it went through the legislature.
Yes, it did. I didn't have anyone approach me and say, hey, we don't need to be doing this. I think that it's just giving any law enforcement officer some baseline in this because the numbers do continue to increase. I think that just giving any officer
slight baseline in this with this information might be able to go a long way. And if it works once, just once, I think it's worth it.
Yeah, but we're taking a closer look at a new state law that took effect this week requiring autism awareness training for all law enforcement officers in the state. Listeners can join the conversation by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. It's been reported that people with autism spectrum disorders are estimated to have 7 times more contact with law enforcement than someone that's not on the autism spectrum over the course of their lifetime. Kathy Zinko, can you give me some insight on why that's likely increase in contact with law enforcement is so dramatic for someone with autism spectrum disorder?
It is. That is quite a shocking statistic, and that is one of the things that we go over when any one of the 7 Center for Autism and Related Disability, we have 7 in the state of Florida, we do this type of training as well with our law enforcement officers. One of the many reasons is some of their behavior patterns, just being part of the autism spectrum, can look suspicious. So, for instance, if you have a young adult on the autism spectrum who might be feeling anxious and they are waiting perhaps for a ride and they're outside a store pacing and flapping their hands, that might be an indication that they're feeling anxious, but somebody who is not familiar with that person or with what that may look like for somebody on the autism spectrum, that might turn into a suspicious person's report, somebody calling in going, there's somebody outside pacing. Sometimes when they don't know how to respond, like I believe we mentioned earlier, that you may hear some echolalia. So if somebody goes up, are you okay? And they just go, are you okay? That's not a response we're used to. And so some of that echolalic response might give an alarming behavior. Oftentimes they have larger responses to sensory things that are going on in the environment, if something is too loud, if it's too bright, and so you might see somebody going into a fight or flight reaction that you might not be aware of. So these are all behaviors, and the one that you mentioned actually about the case in Miami of the individual who was holding a toy truck, we do see that a lot with individuals on the spectrum who like to just what we call clutch. They have something in their hand just to I don't know, it helps them get through the day or it just really helps them, and that can be misinterpreted as a dangerous object. So all of the things that you're mentioning, unfortunately, can look suspicious or threatening to our law enforcement officers, and as we said earlier, you know, these are split-second decisions, and we have to keep the safety of the individuals with autism as well as our law enforcement officers in mind. So it's a very tricky thing to do to tease that out and to also make sure that it can be a decision made in that quick decision to make sure that everybody's safe.
Is there probably also some education necessary for bystanders who would call in and report the guy that's pacing out in front of a convenience store and, flapping his hands around? I mean, is it that suspicious activity? Is it the bystanders that are calling them in also that are increasing their interactions with law enforcement?
I would think so, yes. But I think that would be a harder way to systematically train people. So I think once we can get this basic training into a lot of the law enforcement agencies, Lee County is one of the many counties that has been doing this since before this legislation has passed. So there are lots of different law enforcement agencies who have taken a proactive approach to this, so that when that call does come in, the officers who respond to the call at least know in their repertoire of questions to ask of a situation, could this possibly be somebody on the autism spectrum?
And when they go and encounter someone and they begin to suspect that maybe they are a person that's on the autism spectrum, is that a cue to maybe turn off the flashing lights? Because that could be one of those triggers. Are those some of the things that are trained for?
Absolutely. So that's some of the key pieces in the trainings that we talk about, is what can be done that could improve a situation. So if you're asking, could this be somebody on the autism spectrum, let me go turn off my lights and the siren to the car. Perhaps let me not approach them in such a threatening manner, kind of go slow, lower my voice, repeat what I say, perhaps write something down. Oftentimes individuals on the spectrum process things visually better. So if they don't respond to your verbal questioning, perhaps you could write it down.
And then, Lieutenant Leinberger, is there a typical way, can you recall maybe for me a specific encounter between someone on the autism spectrum and law enforcement? We were talking a little bit earlier about how things changed really quickly. Can you give me an example of that?
Well, just from personal experience and stepping out with people that could be on the autism spectrum disorder, you kind of have to expect that their behavior could change. In the particular incident that I was talking about earlier, their complete demeanor changed within seconds, and it was something that was unexpected. Everything was going fine. Next thing you know, their demeanor changed. They went from a compliant, polite individual. Next thing you know, they're crying. They're upset. They're angry, and nothing had changed around the environment. It was just something had triggered them to change that behavior.
A switch just flipped. And then how do you train an officer to handle that? What is their response supposed to be in that kind of a situation?
Well, there's a difference between when the officer is put in danger and when they are responding to a person with that is giving indications that they may have autism. Anytime they're putting the officer in danger, our priority is to make sure that not only the officer but the public as well as the individual is as safe as can be. So our goal is to try to find out what disorders or what factors could be there. The Lee County Sheriff's Office works with several organizations here locally. One of those is the Family Initiative, and they include – part of that is they have armbands that identify the person as being on the autism spectrum disorder. An officer that sees that armband on a person now gets a lot of information really quickly going, okay, I see that armband. I'm not dealing with somebody that's out to hurt me. I'm dealing with somebody that may be on the autism spectrum disorder. And when their behavior changes, it may be a result of that disorder, not because of their aggression or something like that. They also have items like seatbelt covers that contain information. So when we do a traffic stop on somebody that may be driving that's on the autism spectrum disorder, we see that seatbelt cover. We now know, okay, that's an indication their behavior may change. They may respond a different way than what we expect. We can open that seat cover. It gives us caretaker information, what their limitations and capabilities are. A lot of information very quickly, which helps us out in the long run.
And we talked earlier before the show started about specifically traffic stops. And there are a lot of people that are on the autism spectrum that are driving on the road and they're just fine. But once you pull somebody over, things can change. How do you train officers to deal with that?
Well, it's a two-phase approach. Obviously, we have the training for the officers to recognize indicators and the response to those indicators. We also work with the autistic community. And we host a driver challenge for high-functioning autistic drivers. And basically we do fictitious traffic stops on them to show them here's what you can expect. You can expect flashing lights. You can expect somebody to walk up and get right in the window of the car. You can expect probably short and not expansive language. For instance, give me your license. But that it's a two-way street because a lot of people on the autism spectrum disorder give us indicators. For instance, they may fidget a lot, which gives us indicators. Okay, what are they hiding? Why are they so nervous? They may not look at us directly. They may we may give them the command to, hey, I need your license, something simple that we take for granted. That may be a large thing to them. They might have to reach over to the glove compartment quickly. So if they have any item that can tell us quickly that, hey, this is an autistic individual or somebody on the autism spectrum disorder, that really changes the interaction that we have with them.
Yeah. And then, Kathy Zinko, there's some of the behaviors that the lieutenant here was describing. Can you tell me some of the other behaviors? I mean, eye contact. Are there any commonalities across the spectrum?
Well, yeah, yes and no. I mean, obviously we keep saying, you know, every person is very different, but there are some core deficits, and the social communication and repetitive behaviors are the two categories that you will see across in some way or another across all individuals on the autism spectrum. So he's already mentioned that this lack of eye contact, oftentimes that's difficult for people on the autism spectrum, which then may make them look like they're hiding something or guilty. Not knowing how to respond, especially when stressed. I love this idea of your driver challenge that you just mentioned, and it's great in practice. But when they are stressed, a lot of times those things that they can practice when it's just a practice, it's difficult for them to do in a real-life situation. So you may see them completely shut down and not answer at all. And so then that brings in some other suspicions. These repetitive behaviors where you may see them, like he said, very fidgety or repeating nonsense words or getting stuck on, you know, license and registration, but then they can't actually go and reach for the license and registration. So that is just some of the things that we do often see. And a lot of times we see a lack of affect. So what emotion or facial expression you might anticipate seeing, sometimes our individuals do the opposite. So in the very serious situation, they may laugh. And again, all of this may come off as very suspicious behavior if you didn't know that they were on the autism spectrum.
Well, I mean, a lot of the behaviors that you're describing are kind of behaviors that you would suspect of somebody who has done something wrong or who is hiding something or who is uncomfortable being faced with law enforcement. So I think it would be really hard to parse out who is a person on the spectrum and then who is somebody who may have actually done something wrong. How are you able to split that hair, so to speak?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of times this identification is very important. I know we have seen individuals with, you know, identification bracelets, even medical alert ID bracelets, where they are putting autism on that, the seatbelt covers that were mentioned. Another thing that the Coral Gables Police Department has helped create something called a wallet card, where individuals can go on their website, which is justdigit.org, and you look up the wallet card, and you can put your identifying information in addition to just your driver's license of name, I have autism, I have trouble communicating, contact this caregiver in case of emergency. They also did a really nice training video with their own police department that shows actual individuals on the autism spectrum, one in a traffic stop, one of those examples I shared about, you know, the pacing outside a store, et cetera. But it is, you are absolutely correct in that it's very hard to tease out, especially in these, you know, instant decision-making situations. One of the things I just recommended when we did some training for our FAMU police department is just giving some of these indicators to look for and asking the officers, just add this one more question to your decision-making matrix. Could this be autism spectrum disorder? So at least it gets some thinking back to that. What am I looking for? What could autism spectrum disorder look like? And at least factor that into the quick decision-making process.
And we talked a little bit about, you know, the bracelet, a medical alert bracelet, and then there was discussion of an armband that Lieutenant Leinberger was talking about. But then you get into the discussion of labeling and, you know, putting a badge on someone saying that this person has an autism spectrum disorder. And I mean, that's kind of another moral quandary that you get into, whether to put a label on someone or not, and then, but it's also in the name of keeping them safe. So is that kind of like an individual situation to try to sort that out?
Absolutely. That is a question that comes up a lot, this the notion of disclosure. You know, do you let people know? You know, you don't have to let people know. Obviously, that's a private thing you need to decide. But within each individual, the individual, their caregivers, they need to make the decision what's going to be in the best interest of this individual. Having a way to let other people know that, wait a minute, I have autism, I need some special considerations, please take a moment, you know, don't judge exactly my behaviors of something that might seem suspicious. So it definitely is an individual and their family and care team's decision whether or not they do put some type of disclosure or something like a medical ID bracelet that would alert the public. It's a balancing act. You have to see, is it worth it? Is this going to be more beneficial to us in the end rather than, you know, putting something out there that you may or may not want everybody to know just by looking at you.
We are exploring best practices for law enforcement interactions with people who have autism spectrum disorder. A new law mandating autism awareness training for police officers took effect in Florida just this week. Listeners can join the conversation with your comments or questions. The phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. And Representative Jenny, I don't mean to leave you out of the conversation, but I wanted to ask specifically to you, some supporters of the law who spoke during this year's legislative session said that they liked the measure, but they wished that it had been expanded to include training that would encompass awareness to a broader spectrum of developmental disabilities. Was there something that you had initially wanted to include in the bill, or anything that we might see the legislature take up to add to it next year?
Well, the bill, the original genesis of the bill came from a constituent by the name of Tim Arnwine, who was concerned about his child. And really, from there, that's how it went. We did have groups come to us and ask, but we had major concerns and had received notice that expansion of the bill, you know, could fiscally put this in a much different situation where nothing would happen. One of the things, though, that I went through, and I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, like I did when we were passing it out in the House. Is the amount of hours that goes into law enforcement training, and I believe it's 40 hours a year. So when you start slicing and dicing and expanding this, if you had every developmental disorder listed, it was worked out so that the law enforcement officer's training would consist of nothing else. And each subject would be talked about 6 to 10 minutes, I want to say. I don't have the exact math in front of me, but there just simply isn't enough hours to train the officers to expand it to that size. You know, I'm sure the legislature would have an appetite for some other ones, but when we ran this bill, it was just to be done with the autism in mind. And it just the expansion of the bill would have significantly cut down on other types of training, quite frankly, that law enforcement needs to take every year. You know, life-saving training, things of that nature. There's other types of training that need to be included. And when it expanded to that large of a bill, it quite literally turned it into a situation where there just weren't enough hours in the day.
And Lieutenant Lineberg, how many hours is allotted per year for officers?
The bare minimum requirements by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement is 40 hours every 4 years. I don't know of any agency that meets those bare minimum requirements. They all by far exceed those requirements. It depends on the particular agency, but most of them exceed those, but that's not mandated.
Okay, so he's talking about
– mandated the 40-hour requirement is 40 hours every 4 years to maintain the certification.
So the lawmakers are talking about cramming this into that required 40 hours. But in reality, you're saying that most organizations do far more than that.
Correct. But with that said, we cover over 40 topics of recurring training throughout that four-year cycle. I would agree it's very difficult to get more topics in. However, I think we've done a good job here at the Lee County Sheriff's Office in fitting that into our training sessions.
Well, since at least 2011 and then before then, correct?
Correct. Before 2011, we had it as part of our regular without lumping it in together with mental illness, we covered the topic of response to people with mental illness.
Uh-huh.
And included in that broad topic was autism spectrum, Asperger's disorder.
And then you broke it out in 2011.
And in 2011, we really pulled autism out of that broad topic and said, we are going to focus on this singular topic of response to persons with autism versus just mentally ill persons in general, because they are two separate topics.
Yeah. And also our understanding and evolution of that has come a long way too throughout the years. We have a call on the line from Allison in Sarasota. Allison, what would you like to ask?
Hi, I actually had a couple of comments. It's wonderful with the training for the police, and I understand complete empathy, because understanding how police got to a car and they don't know what's going to be happening to them. My concern was if there was something that was identifying people on the autistic spectrum that was visible to other people, that could make these people definite victims for perpetrators out there. if there was something that was generally identifiable, if you get what I mean.
You mean making them vulnerable to other people?
Yeah, when they weren't in their cars, being identified by cops. I had an idea if it was perhaps not possible, but if these people are driving, was there something that could be put in their license plate that other people wouldn't know about? Something simple, like, I don't know, some letter that people are not going to know about in the general public, perpetrators in general. I would be concerned about people on the spectrum going out there with bracelets on that people might then be able to see and read and then understand that they could then make these people into victims. That's my main concern.
That's a good point that you bring up, and I hadn't thought of that. Lieutenant Lineberg?
There are many different ways to identify. The examples that I gave earlier are just some of those ways. For instance, the seatbelt covers, the wristbands, et cetera. And all of that is 100% voluntary. That is between the person and their caregivers, and it's a decision that they make. There are numerous other methods that we already use or employ. One of those, for instance, we work with several local autism
organizations,
gotcha. Including My Autism Connection, and they produce a card that was mentioned earlier that they can hand over with their driver's license to let the officer know this is the conditions that I have and these are the concessions I might need. Again, that's voluntary. That's not available to the general public. That's something that they can keep in their wallet that they can hand over at the time. So there's numerous other ways. We also have what's called Project Lifesaver, and that's for people that are prone to wandering. Now, that is a bracelet that they have on them at all times that gives off a signal. It's not identifiable as a it's just a regular bracelet.
It could look like a Fitbit or something.
Just a basic
right.
bracelet that they could wear that wouldn't be readily identifiable. But then say they are prone to wandering, we can tap into that frequency, use antennas to follow them and ultimately find them.
Kind of a GPS tracking type thing.
Somewhat, yes.
Like the gizmo that they have for little kids now. They have a little wristwatch like that.
Yes.
And Kathy, I wanted to ask you before we cut loose, I think we're about out of time, but I wanted to ask you, aside from law enforcement, who else do you think could benefit from this type of training? Maybe medical responders, educators?
Absolutely. And I know part of the mission of all the CARD centers is to do training, and we do it for everybody, educators, first responders, communities, churches, anybody. But I definitely think our training has been focused not just on law enforcement officers, but also first responders, because they are often, obviously, based on their name, the first people called out when there is concern, or, as Lieutenant Lineberg mentioned, if a person on the autism spectrum is missing. And when those first responders may be the first person to approach the individual, knowing some really key strategies of how to approach them so that they're not more frightened and run even further. I think that's also very important. So anybody who has interaction with the general public, especially with the numbers going up as they are over the years, with 1 in 68 individuals now identified on the autism spectrum, you know, it is important to get that awareness out there so people know what to expect and then how to interact so that both parties have a positive interaction.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but I want to thank our guests. We've been speaking with Florida State Representative Evan Jenny, Lee County Sheriff's Office Lieutenant Scott Lineberger, and Kathy Zenko with the Center for Autism and Related Disabilities at Florida State University. Thank you all for being part of the show.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, we're talking about a series of speakers at Florida Southwestern State College encouraging critical thinking and why it's needed for your health and your mind. It's about applying reason to news, food, business, and more. That's next on Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Stay with us.